The weather in Central Ohio just got better, and so should your loan rate. CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.9% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org. Terms apply. Minimum floor rates 4.99% APR car, 6.5% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
0141-951-1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on another big weekend across Scottish football. Celtic knock Aberdeen for six to stay 8 points clear at the top of the table heading into the international break. Rangers, of course, have a game in hand. They did cut the gap to five for a few hours after an incident-packed afternoon at Livingston. And there were big wins for Dundee, St Johnstone, Hibs and Hearts as Motherwell's terrible run continues. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me tonight, you have Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna.
And what will we talk about, Gordon? Celtic score six, get a VAR penalty and watch Kyogo stagger off dazed and confused. Rangers score two, have two more disallowed by VAR and get two penalties. Lauren Shanklin scores two to deepen Motherwell's plight and earn a Scotland recall. And Craig Levein works his magic to get St Johnstone off the bottom and leave five teams within 2 points of bottom place. All of that, and Hugh Keevans is in day two of his Super Scoreboard birthday cake. What a weekend!
Indeed he is. Belated happy birthday to our number one listener, as he will be tonight. Andy, quite the weekend all across the board.
Yeah, you can say that again. Plenty of talking points, I'm sure we'll get into them. Celtic go from a 6-0 thrashing in Madrid to thrashing Aberdeen 6-0. Rangers pretty comfortable in their victory as well. But most importantly, the Clyde One derby was on.
Oh no.
And it's a Hearts victory. So I'm sure we'll get into a bit of that as well.
One each for the season. But that's of all I've got to cling on to. 01419511025. Pick up that phone right now and let us know what you're thinking. There is so much to get through, as the guys have said. Even so, if we start yesterday, Celtic fans, you've got the performance, the six goals. How pleased were you with what you witnessed overall? There was Kyogo's injury. There is all sorts going on there in that game. You then go to Livingston, talk about incident packed. If we get a straightforward win, if you like, Rangers keeping the unbeaten run under Philippe Clement going. So in a football sense, what did you make of that? Two penalties given, two goals disallowed. Try to keep up with the number of them there. So please do get in touch there. 01419511025. And anything else from the weekend, Motherwell fans, what on earth is happening? The good news is Halliday bench cam was actually at Fir Park this week, so you've got an extra insight there as well. And it's international break. John Carver spoke today. Rangers financial results are out. We might need to extend the show at this rate. 01419511025. Call us right now if you can. Please go on then. Set the tone. Set the scene for us. Result of the weekend, Roger.
Hey, I was there for Super Scoreboard yesterday. Celtic 6, Aberdeen 0. If you're going to bounce back from a 6-0 defeat to Atletico Madrid, the best way to do it is a 6-0 win over Aberdeen. The Dons have been at Celtic Park three times in the calendar year of 2023. They've lost 4-0, 5-0 and 6-0. Barry Robson has problems with that squad, despite what they've done in Europe this season. But Brendan Rodgers can go into the international break content. Celtic are 8 points clear again.
Aberdeen fans, you might want to share your thoughts on it. Andy, your alternative to that result of the weekend?
I think it might be a first for me. Two weekends in a row I've went for Dundee, but I think it's a pretty fair reflection on the weekend. I think going into the game you'd have probably edged out St Mirren's favourites, which had been harsh on Dundee given their home record. But you know, after the first round of fixtures, sitting joint fourth on the table, I think Tony Docket's done a fantastic job and they fully merited the victory.
Hard to argue. Well done to Dundee. Goal of the weekend, what are you giving me?
Well, you know, I like a bit of, I like a team goal or a bit of magic. Okay. So I've went for O's first goal. And you could probably guess why.
It's the all in the cross.
The ball in for Lewis Palma. I've said a few times that I think Rangers might live to regret not getting him over the line during the summer. I think we're starting to see why. I think he's shown real, real quality. And that ball in for the first goal is moment of the weekend as well as goal.
Okay, what are you going?
Well, to try and spread the love a little bit, I'm going to go to Easter Road on Saturday. Hibs beat Kilmarnock 1-0. Josh Campbell, he'd struggled for game time under Link Montgomery. Came back in, got a goal at St Mirren last midweek, stayed in the team and got the winner. And Andy probably liked it. A Hearts player can't say that about a Hibs goal.
Yeah.
Decent team goal, nice finish across the goalie. He's back with a bang.
That's all well and good. What was your howler of the weekend? Because we've had a few.
Let me go through my list of all the howlers we've got this weekend. I'll just edge out David Munro, since it involved the Clyde 1 derby. The decision to go to the monitor and not give Liam Boyce a penalty was absolutely baffling. And you must agree. My bench cam's got more to add to this later on in the show, and we'll get into it in deeper detail.
All I've heard from you pundits all season is that referees should have the courage of their convictions, and if they stick to their own even if they go to the monitor, stick to their own decision. It finally happens,
yep,
and you go and complain about it. Unbelievable.
I've been welcomed that site as well, but not on that occasion because it was a Stonewall penalty.
Talk about wanting your cake and eating it as well, right? I'll reluctantly admit that maybe you should have had a penalty for that one. Roger Hanna, there was a few. What else are you giving me?
Back to Celtic Park yesterday, Slobodan Ribišić. That kind of challenge where Kyogo was hurt, Ribišić was booked. In my mind, lucky not to be sent off. That challenge needs to come out of football. Stuart Kettlewell spoke very well about it last week. He's lost a couple of players at different times this season to nasty head knocks. Crossing Sport, the New Zealand All Black captain, was sent off in the World Cup final for a challenge to the head of a South African player. We can argue all day how much intent there was in it, but it was at force, it was at pace. For me, it was endangering an opponent, and I think everyone at Celtic Park was just glad to see Kyogo get back to his feet and be able to walk off.
Okay, I'm not sure everyone agrees, so if you want to get a debate about that going, you can. Same number, 01419511025. And finally then, let's give a bit of positivity, spread the love, as you said. Who was your man of the weekend, top performer, Andy?
Again, I think there could have been a good few nominations, but I went for Lauren Shankland, sticking with the Clyde 1 derby. I think he's I think he came under a bit of unfair criticism. I don't think his performance levels were quite his top, but in terms of his numbers, I don't think it was too dissimilar to his numbers towards the start of last season. Then he went on that, you wouldn't even say purple patch, because it lasted about 3-4 months, but he came back with a bang over the last couple of weeks. A double at the weekend, overall performance fantastic, and the news that he's back in the Scotland squad, that's great.
That is true. There has been a change to the Scotland squad. He's in place of Shea Adams. If you want to get round to that stuff, you can. I'm sure we will later in the week as well. And last, certainly not least, Roger Hanna, your man of the weekend.
Yeah, by a distance, Graham Carey of St Johnstone. It was at McDermott Park for Super Scoreboard at the weekend. There was a bucket collection outside the ground to raise money for his wife's GoFundMe page. Rachel Bothwick is dealing with cancer at the minute. They are looking to fund some extra therapy for her, some extra treatment. I looked today, they're aiming to raise £60,000. They've got in excess of £52,000 already. To quote Craig Levine, this must be with Graham every second of every day. And for 90 minutes on Saturday, you would never have known a fantastic performance crowned by a fantastic winning goal. And as we said in the show on Saturday, we wish them all well.
Yeah, well said. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it feels like the most appropriate way to explain it is that it, you know, properly does put football into perspective. We are probably about to lose all sense of perspective when we argue about things for the next couple of hours. I don't think there's always things wrong with that either. But well done to Graham Carey, and all the best to him and his family after the weekend. 01419511025. Whatever you're thinking tonight, phone us right now, like Martin and Wisher has, to kick things off. Martin, how are you?
Good, Gordon, thanks.
Good. What's your point tonight? Lots to discuss from the weekend.
Well, hello, Roger, and hello, Andy.
Hi, Martin.
Hello, Martin.
Roger, you're one of the last class acts in Scottish football journalism, mate. Wow. I just like to pay you that compliment.
Thank you very much. I feel there's a butt coming here, Martin.
No, there isn't at all, mate. It's just, I've never ever phoned Clyde One before, and I've been listening to Jimmy Sanderson, used to host the show. I'm just calling out for a wee bit of protection for Scotland's most lethal marksman. That is Kyogo. Like, you know, after the assault on him yesterday, which I thought was shocking, the guy who inflicted that assault on him was delighted with the yellow card. And I was at the game, right, and my brother said to me at the time, he knew exactly what he was doing there. I reserved judgment until I seen him on Sports Scene last night. And he made sure he got the ball, but he followed through and got Kyogo with his forehead, right? The forehead is the thickest bit of the skull, and he was aiming for the side of Kyogo's head. The one about the eye socket, that's the thinnest bit of the skull. Kyogo was very, very lucky. He wasn't very seriously injured. But the idea was to get Scotland's most lethal marksman off the park. So that way it was mission accomplished, but it didn't stop them from getting the doing that they eventually got.
Let's discuss. I must admit, I'm not sure these players have ever got time to think very quickly about what exact point of Kyogo's head, but let's get to the...
I'll tell you, I'll go back to what Stuart Kettleman said to me last week. Now, he will go back, he's lost Paul McGinn, Motherwell defender, for 6 weeks with a fractured cheekbone, Gordon, and it was a collision with Lewis Mayo of Kilmarnock. Now, Stuart Kettlewell said he did not believe there was any intent by Lewis Mayo to injure Paul McGinn. But Stuart Kettlewell was annoyed that purely the force, the pace, the speed, the ferocity of the challenge caused this player to be endangered. And the player ended up being out for 6 weeks. Now, I don't know, and I said it at the top of the show, how much intent, if any, there was by Slobodan Rubicic at the weekend.
I always say this, intent is not really, it's not mentioned in the rules really. We don't need to worry about intent
anytime. You cannot be coming in at that pace with your head like that, because it does endanger the opponent. We're talking, Gordon, now in 2023, that young school kids aren't being allowed to head the football because it can endanger them. So you imagine, you know, how dangerous it is in any sport. We spoke about rugby a minute ago. These challenges, and I spoke to Andy off air about it before. Andy said, what are footballers supposed to do? Not challenge for the ball. They're not supposed to challenge the ball for that. Andy, if that needs stamped out the game, get it out the game.
I've got a feeling, like, I'm looking at social media, I feel like there's a lot of players who don't necessarily agree with Roger's take on it and think, you know, the ball's there to be won or whatever. What do you think about it?
Well, before I get into it, I would like to say that the images and the video back are horrible. They're not good viewing. It's really unfortunate to see Kyogo off with an injury like that. You see from the collision, he was pretty much unconscious instantly. So I hope he's all well and I hope he comes back soon. For me, I think we're being harsh on the individual. I really do feel that. And my honest opinion is I don't think it is a red card, because I do think as a defender, as a player, in the heat of the game and in the tempo of the game, I think the ball's there to be won. I think both players are quite blindsided in terms of the contact. Kyogo, I think Rubicic is almost coming for his right-hand shoulder, and I think Rubicic has got his eyes on the ball at the full time. I think we've been very harsh to say he's aiming for a specific part of Kyogo's head. And listen, I think the collision is really, really horrible to see. I think at Hearts, we had four concussion instances last year, and I think it's just a part of a contact sport. But I don't think I can say too many more than that. I don't think it's a red card.
There was a horrible one. You said it's a hot, you know, it looks horrible. There was a horrible one earlier in the season. Remember Danilo scored at McDermott Park, and Liam Gordon came over and made a desperate attempt to clear the ball. You're going to get head collisions in football. I think both Danilo and Liam Gordon went off and missed a period of time because of that. You'll get comings together, if that's the right phrase, and heads banging together. But I just thought in that area of the pitch, there was absolutely no need for Slobodan Rubicic to come in with such pace. Look at some of the sendings off we've had in football in the last few weeks. Dyson Maeda was sent off in Madrid. Marcus Rashford was sent off in Copenhagen. They're just two. Now, wasn't any intent there. They've been maybe a bit clumsy with a challenge, maybe a bit overzealous with a challenge, or mistimed a challenge. Nowadays, in the days of art, those are red cards. Dyson Maeda's a red card, Marcus Rashford's a red card. For me, neither of those challenges endangers an opponent the same way as Rubicic's challenge did yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument, but I think if you'll see my comments, I don't think Dyson Maeda's is a red card. So I think that's all part of the argument within football. And listen, there has been changes in the laws in terms of heading the ball, because we do see the ramifications. We've seen it with a couple of ex-pros down south, leads years and years down the line. So for me, fair play, and I do think it is.
Yep. And I was just getting to say, I don't want this to become a witch hunt about the individual player, Slobodan Rubicic, far from it. But that type of challenge in general needs to come out of the game.
Martin, a bit of a split in here, a bit of a split on social media, a bit of a split everywhere. What do you think of some of the counter arguments? Because to be fair to Andy, it's delivered in a fairly balanced manner, but I take it you'll disagree with it.
No, listen, I expect Andy to stand up for his fellow professionals, right? I expect that for professional footballers. Like, you know, I agree with Roger, but if I can get back to my original point about some protection for Kyogo, can I take you back to the 30th September 2022? It's the Glasgow Derby. Early on in that game, Kyogo was assaulted with John Lundstrom, but with his elbow. Like, you know, and I know you've got the technology there, Gordon. See if you can get back to that and get it up.
I sometimes feel like we do, even if you think it was a foul or whatever, that's twice. The use of the word assault, right, do we need to maybe just like relax
a bit? I'll rein it in a wee bit though. But if you can get that up and you look at the incident that I'm talking about, John Lundstrom gets in with his elbow and he's aiming for, I would say, Kyogo's shoulder area, maybe even his collarbone. And when he gets up for the challenge, Kyogo has to go off. So again, like, you know, the plan was, get Celtic's most lethal marksman off the park. It'll maybe help us. It didn't help Rangers that day. They get beat 4-0. If you remember, that was the day that our ex-player Jota scored his sublime chip. Like, you know, but we had to play the majority of that game without Kyogo. And if you look at that incident, John Lundstrom gets up, has a wee sneaky look at the referee, thanks to himself, I've got away with it.
See, for no other reason than sort of time management, right? Because you all know how this works. We cannot now, with all these talking points tonight, start an argument about a challenge in September last year. Because that, it will
get... challenge against McGregor, we're getting into that again.
We could bring up your tackle against Callum McGregor. It's just for everyone's own sanity. I get why you want to raise the point, Martin, and I'm not dodging it, even though everyone will accuse us of doing that. But there's no point, I don't think,
the bottom line is, the good news is Kyogo's fine. I think he was on his Instagram earlier on. The young people will be able to tell me that, seeing him.
Oh yeah, there's a good translation out. They said the gods of soccer, I think, were looking down on him.
Yeah, okay. I think he said he doesn't really remember anything about the incident at the time. So the good news is he's fine. Mm. The good news is that in 6 weeks' time, Paul McGinn will be fine. We'll be back playing for Motherwell. But going forward, I think, as Stuart Kettlewell said, we need to have a proper debate about it and we need to get challenges like this out the game.
Ross, what do you think?
I think if we start looking at that as a red card, then you're going to damage football more than what it is already damaged at the moment. I think if that's getting sent to VAR for a potential red card, then I think you're then going to have that problem where VAR for every head collision is going to be getting turned over into a red card. It's a nasty challenge, and I generally do hope he's all right, but at the same time, it's a 50-50 header, and one guy came out better than the other. So if you're wanting a red card for that, then I think football's doomed.
I've kind of always agreed, and I know people don't tend to care what I think, but I've always sort of agreed with you generally, Roger, way before yesterday. I feel like football needs to tighten up on ones that, you know, there's like a clear flick on, for instance, and then a good bit after the head comes in. I suppose maybe why there's such a split yesterday, that wasn't like that. It's all about the force, really, it's not like the timing's horrendous.
Ross used the phrase 50-50. I don't actually think it was a 50-50, because Kyogo is not quite static. You're never static in a football pitch, but he's not going with the same. You know, Rubizic is running into the challenge, whereas Kyogo is more or less static.
Is that, and again, devil's advocate sort of thing, is that not just a natural thing that's going to then happen throughout a game where, you know, you can't always guarantee that two players are going to have the same
100%
same movement towards the ball?
There must be a line where you think that there's a bit like challenges on the ground. You'll see a challenge on the ground and you'll say, oh no, that was too much. You can't have that.
So even though he got the ball there, he's got the man, his studs have connected.
But how many times
that's the aerial version.
Challenges on the ground.
That's what I'm saying.
You go through a player to win the ball, and you take man and ball, can't do that anymore. And Ross is saying if that becomes a problem, if that becomes a red card offence, it's going to change football more than it's already changed. Mm. Well, look at rugby. It has changed rugby. Look at that Rugby World Cup. Probably more games than not, there were players either sent off or sin-binned for challenges where there was no great intent, but where the head was endangered. Yesterday, for me, Kyogo's head was endangered.
To be slightly tongue-in-cheek amidst a serious conversation, I can't believe he's taking us down the "we need to be more like rugby" route. Honestly, on this show, of all shows, have a word with yourself. Have you no self-respect?
Poor for you, Roger.
Anyway, thanks Ross, thanks Martin. 01419511025. It is clearly a debating point that's got everyone going. There are loads of others out there as well, so if you've anything else for us, pick up that phone. We'll speak to you next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. It's 0141 951 1025. Loads of you out there are angry with Roger Hanna. Loads of you disagree with Andy Halliday. That's kind of the way it should be. Jack says, when Danilo had a head knock and his cheekbone fractured, there was no talk of the defender not challenging because it would endanger the opponent. Is Roger wanting that kind of challenge to be a red also?
I mentioned that challenge earlier on. I thought that was, you know, you're always going to get defenders making challenges like that. There wasn't the same force involved until we'll always have accidental things like that.
Smashed Danilo's cheekbone, though. No?
No, I genuinely don't think there was as much force.
John is on the line. What do you think, John?
Hi. I'm just kind of shocked at the idea that people don't see this as a red card. I mean, I get ex-players are going to back ex-players, but if the ball, the way I see it is, if the ball was on the floor and two players on the grass, two players were coming in at each other and one misses and catches them on the ankle or on the shin, people are going to say, oh, that was a potential leg breaker and, you know, it's a red card, deserves it. But another player can smash somebody with their head, knock them out, and people are like, oh, no, ruin the game if you make that a red. I don't understand how people aren't unanimous in saying that that is an utterly ridiculous challenge and it should be a red.
What do you think of the more general argument, Andy? If take one step back from Kyogo and Rubisic, does football still have a sort of a bit of a mental block with how we think about aerial late challenges versus late challenges on the ground? And again, to reiterate, I'm not necessarily on about yesterday, mm-hmm. but it's just opened that thought process for me. Do players still get away with more in the air than they do on the deck, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. And Roger mentioned earlier that he feels like a debate needs to happen in terms of around aerial challenges, and I think that's fair. I think the data shows that when you see the percentage. I can't crunch the numbers right now, but when you see the percentage of ex-pros that years down the line have the likes of dementia and memory loss and stuff like that. But again, I'm only just putting myself in that instance where that ball's there to be won. I think 99.9% of footballers are going for it. And we argue about this force all the time. I think when it is a loose ball, you're going to go in with any kind of force. Again, I echo horrible viewings looking them back. But then I'll pose the question to you two. What's the change? What's the demand? Are we eradicating headers altogether?
I'm just the referee of this debate.
I'm going to put the pressure on. Is it producer Michael that's on tonight?
I think there's a few of them in there. Pressing buttons.
If there's a few of them in pressing buttons, one fewer can press a button, and they can maybe find Stuart Kettlewell's interview from last week, because Gabriel Antoniadze was out there at Fir Park as Stuart Kettlewell was speaking very well about this topic. He has already spoken to Crawford Allen, the head of referees at the SFA. He wants referees to be more alert to challenges like this, more aware of the danger of challenges like this. He feels the focus for referees has always been on challenges on the ground. Maeda against Madrid, Rashford against Copenhagen, Halliday against McGregor, that kind of thing on the ground. Whereas he believes, and he was speaking in quite colourful terms, I think at one stage he used the phrase, would you rather have a broken ankle or a brain injury? Now that is obviously taking it to the nth degree, but that was the point he was making, that there is a threat of real danger to footballers unless challenges like this are dealt with properly and taken out of the game.
I think you're then falling into the realms that if you jump up for a header and someone wins it before you and you make contact with the opponent's edge, you're getting sent off. That's the way I feel that goes. If you have the debate
but
I mean, how can you eradicate going for a header of the ball, and if you don't make contact, then you're leading to offences and punishments.
But that's what happens on the ground now.
And I debate strenuously, I said about Maeda's tackle last week, some of them are ridiculous, but again, that's where we fall into the interpretation of the letter of the law. It necessarily won't agree with what my opinion should be, a yellow or a red card, but I don't know how you work around head injuries. I really don't. I'd love someone to come out there and try and help me around, you know, fix a way around it.
Maybe John can.
I don't know, all I'm hearing is this argument Andy's making as well. It's essentially saying that he has the right to go for it. The ball's there, it's a 50-50. And the same way that
Rodgers arguing, well, the rules are there for this exact same type of incident. If the ball was on the floor, you can go for that 50-50. You can both challenge for that ball. But if you miss that ball or if you go through that ball and wipe the player out, take the ankle, take the shin, it's a red card. I'm not saying you should ban heading, but if you do that, if you try to go for the ball and you cause such an injury as to somebody to be knocked out, because not only was he knocked out with the force of the header, but his face also smashed off the floor as well. And everybody knows about the severity of head injuries these days. You have endangered your opponent by doing that. That should be a red card. Your intent shouldn't matter. What you have done is endangered your opponent and you should be off. No one's saying ban heading or stop those sorts of challenges, but it at least would make a player think twice about trying to make another challenge like that and potentially causing another player a serious injury, because, that was, watching that was horrific yesterday.
Let's hear what Brendan Rodgers made of it. He revealed Kyogo wouldn't go on international duty with Japan. Perhaps no real surprise there. At the time, he hadn't seen it back, but he said they'd respect the referee's decision to produce the yellow card.
Yeah, fine. I think that it looked a nasty one, Kyogo's one. So he'll stay behind. He won't travel to Japan, and he'll be fine, I'm sure, in a few days' time. And Yang, again, likewise, coming in at the back post and just got banging below his left eye, but he's okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it back. I think it's obviously one of those nasty ones. The defenders come right through and you're facing into it. But yeah, listen, they've had a look at it, the officials, so you have to respect that.
John, of course, there was a football game in and around it where your team scored 6 goals. So there's no shortage of talking points. What did you make of the performance and the response to being on the wrong end of a 6 during the week?
It was certainly good to have a good performance, because we've not had that many, especially in the league, in the last few weeks. So it was good to actually come back for, such an embarrassing defeat in midweek and actually do that yesterday. So hopefully that'll give us a good run up to the new year game, where we can hopefully keep putting pressure on and hopefully extend the lead come the new year.
I don't think Celtic still, obviously, regardless of what happens during the week, Roger, Celtic still going to that as major favourites, just because of the footballing landscape in Scotland. Aberdeen played on Thursday, so you wonder if that could impact them. But even at that, was this a particularly convincing, impressive attacking display from Celtic?
Yes, it was. And you have to give Barry Robson credit, because I asked him after the game, did fatigue from Greece play a part? And he said, no, I'm not having that at all. It was an especially poor performance by Aberdeen. But I looked up, Gordon, there wasn't 1 minute on the clock, and every player, with the exception of Joe Hart, was within 35 yards of the Aberdeen goal. And that scenario hardly changed through the 90 minutes. It was like a tactical training session that Stephen Naismith will put Andy and the players through at the Orium, attack versus defence. That's what it was like. I remember Aberdeen...
He's very much on the defence one at the moment.
He's very much in the Orium bench with a bench cam filming it.
Just for clarity.
Aberdeen were up the park twice. Johnny Hayes screwed one wide in the first half. Miofsky had a nice little flick that Joe Hart saved in the second half. Apart from that, it was wave after wave of Celtic attack. And I'm actually surprised it took them so long to score the 6.
You're much, obviously, much better at this stuff, Andy, because the sort of sitting off the game and catching teams is when Aberdeen have been at their best. You look at going to Ibrox, albeit Rangers were in a bad place. You look at Frankfurt. You look at the other night in Greece against an opponent that you and your teammates know fine well are good. What was the balance between Aberdeen being too passive and Celtic just being really at it?
A bit of both, but I certainly do think Aberdeen were really, really passive. Roger mentioned in the first minute, if you actually find out the heat map, the average positions of the Aberdeen players in the first half, all 11 were in their own defensive half. The back three were literally the edge of their own D on their box. So I think that shows how much Celtic had them penned in and camped in. But at the same time, some of Celtic's tempo, intensity, interplay, their ability to find space, even though there was 11 players, I thought Matt O'Reilly was the best player on the pitch. And we're talking about an Aberdeen side that had 11 players within 30, 40 yards of their goal, and his ability to find space within that compact structure was pretty, pretty impressive. The second goal, Kyogo's goal before he goes off, Aberdeen have 10 players in their box when Kyogo scores that goal. Yet, again, we talk about his movement all the time, still manages to find space to tap it in the goal. And in terms of Aberdeen, really, really passive within their structure, didn't make contact to people, made it very, very easy for Celtic, in my opinion. And then, like he says, quite rightly so, a lot of their strengths and their performances, Rangers, European football, has came from that defensive structure. But to me, they had an out. You know, they had a way to get up the pitch. They had patterns of play, whether it was spinning down the channel to Miovski or playing through the wider wing-backs. The wing-backs didn't leave a back five. Yeah. And they found it really, really difficult to get up the pitch.
I was going to say that to you, Andy. The wing-backs became full-backs because they couldn't leave Palma and Yang.
Sweeper full-backs, I thought.
Yeah, they just couldn't leave. And then, you know, so if they can't get forward to support Miovski, you're going to have to look at one of the midfielders to go and support Miovski. They were too busy running back towards their own goal because of O'Reilly's movement. And Miovski, he was 30 or 35 yards away from his closest teammate at times.
How pleasing was it to see the impact of the wingers in particular, John? You know, at a time when Maeda's just been laid down with an injury, Abada's obviously out, Jota left in the summer. Was it pleasing to see those two being so productive yesterday?
Certainly, Palmer really stuck out to me. I can't remember who it was. Someone, I think it may have been Gordon DL yesterday, said that Palmer has made the Celtic fans forget about Jota, and I can see that to an extent because he does look like he's got the potential to really, you know, do some great things in the team. Obviously, it's early still, but he just looks like he has that ability about him to really go on and do some good stuff. So watching him is a joy because he just seems to be getting better and better by each game.
Good man, John. It was hardly a quiet day in Livingston yesterday, so if you've any thoughts on that one, now would be a good time to get them in. And whilst you do, let me tell you about this. Clyde One. It's a triple rollover on Make Me A Winner this afternoon. The call went to five rings unanswered, and it could then be you now who's the winner of £114,000 when we make another call. But you need to be in the draw, obviously. So we've teamed up with our stations across the UK to bring you this £114,000 prize. And it's very simple. You text YES to 61025. The texts are £2 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at clyde1.com. Online entries are £2, or call 0330 880 4523, and the calls are charged at a standard rate as well. It's over 18s only, and the entries since Doogie won on Wednesday have rolled over. All the other rules for this network competition are online. So if you get the call after 3pm tomorrow, Tuesday the 14th, answer within five rings, say Make Me A Winner straight away, and the £114,000 could be yours. Text YES to 61025.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
0141 951 1025. That's the number you need to join Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna. A lot been said already about Celtic at Celtic's game against Aberdeen yesterday, at Celtic Park. Eventually we got to the performance and Yang and Palma and all the rest of it. Of course, lots been said about the Kyogo head injury at the beginning. It was hardly a quiet day at Livingston either, though, Craig, who's on the line. What do you want to discuss tonight?
So the main thing I want to discuss is VAR in general, but obviously from the aspect of that game at the weekend, because it's the one that I sat and watched myself.
Sure.
So what it is I think that VAR, it's too inconsistent. There's things that some teams are getting, other teams aren't. And I don't believe it's evening itself out. I think Brendan Rodgers is right. I think they either need to get rid of it, which will be very hard because obviously UEFA are probably saying that they have to have it along with other leagues in Europe. But we either need that or we need people that can run it properly rather than just throwing the referees in who we already said that we didn't believe were good enough before VAR came in. If you look at that game alone, there was three incidents. Two of them that VAR didn't even notice. So the first one, the first one VAR did notice, I think I had a look at it, was the penalty for Ross McCausland. I'm a Rangers fan, that was a clear dive. VAR shouldn't be getting tricked by that.
This will never catch on, Craig. What is this? You're going to face accusations of not actually being a Rangers fan on my Twitter any second now.
I'm just realistic. If I want to bring my tinted glasses out, I noticed a couple of weeks ago against Hearts, it was the exact same with Kyogo. They got a penalty. It was never a penalty. There was no contact.
Right, let's go through them one by one, because I know you said you've got a bit of a list. So let's deal with that one. I don't know if we're going to argue here. I mean, Craig's a Rangers fan, and he's saying, I don't mind, I'll admit it, I thought McCausland was a dive and shouldn't have been a penalty. Is it, are you in agreement, you two?
Yeah, no penalty for me. I was amazed that that Steve McLean wasn't sent to the monitor. It's the classic that we talk about all the time, if forwards try to initiate the contact, go down. If contact did come, it certainly wasn't enough to go down and win a penalty. So I was amazed that was given.
You? Full house, no penalty.
Right, okay. That's a bit boring then, isn't it? All right, what's the next one, Craig?
Right, so the next one that a lot of people didn't notice in live play was one to do with Cantwell. Now, Cantwell, he went over a player. The player went down during the tuffle. And then Cantwell, you see, shoving the player. He gets a yellow card. And you're wondering why he's getting involved. If you look back at the video, there's a reason he gets involved. The player's on the deck. He's got his leg bent. So he's lying there, leg bent. He sees Cantwell coming over the top of him. As soon as Cantwell comes over the top of him, he actually kicks his leg out and straightens his leg, and every single stud on his boot goes into the top of Cantwell's shin. Now, if Cantwell's foot was planted, that was a leg breaker, yet VAR didn't even look at that. They should have been able to look at Cantwell's reaction and say, why has he reacted so badly to that? And then have a look at the whole scenario. That should have been a red card. That if VAR picked up on that and looked at that, that would have been a red card all day long. The player is, it's not the fact that the player's put his leg out, that can happen. But you see the player looking at Cantwell and he actually stabs his leg out from a bent position into a full straight leg with force because he can see Cantwell coming over the top of him. That's why he reacted the way he did. The VAR didn't even look at it. Mm.
Just for accuracy on that, because we hear that a lot. I was talking to someone about a completely different incident. VAR looks at pretty much everything, all stuff like that. People, I think we need to fall into the trap of thinking because the ref doesn't go to the monitor. However, you're still more than entitled to think it's a terrible mistake and a howler and an injustice. That's fine, but I just mean for accuracy. Are you familiar with the incident?
I'm slightly compromised in this, Craig, because the good people of Super Scoreboard by this time had sent me out into the cold at Celtic Park yesterday, so I didn't see this in real time. But I am aware that Todd Cantwell has posted,
taken to Instagram
as the kids say.
Yeah.
With video footage and still photography of the incident.
Have you seen it back,
Andy?
He says, I have, yeah.
Right.
You know, you've taken Craig to task there. Todd Cantwell says, rightly or wrongly, this wasn't checked by VAR. Don't know how Todd Cantwell knows this.
Well, that's what I mean.
He claims it wasn't checked by VAR.
It's not a big deal. I don't want to get hung up on that. It's not a big deal. I just think that phrase is just very unhelpful because I think when people use it, what they mean is they didn't go to the monitor. Yeah. That's really what people mean. What did you think of it, Andy?
I mean, I'm starting to sound like an old-fashioned 1970s football player here, but was there enough force to... I seen it as more petulant than anything, I think.
From both of them?
Yeah, for both of them. So
I mean, Todd Cantwell might then say, well, he didn't...
I think he could definitely feel like Reeved at Livingston Square didn't get booked, absolutely.
So
but
you think
I'm
two
not
yellows
sure
would have been enough?
Yeah, I'd say two yellows.
You're going to have to agree to disagree with him, Craig?
No, to be fair, I could actually agree with that. It's just the fact that it doesn't seem like... The reason why I'm saying it doesn't seem like VAR's looked at it is because usually, even when it doesn't come up on the monitor, we usually hear something from the commentary that they're having a look at this or they're having a look at that. Like, literally, there was no word about that whatsoever, as if no one noticed it.
I don't think
that actually happened.
That is fair. I obviously, you know, when you're not in the room, I think there is a level of that. But
there wasn't too much of a replay of it on Sky. Because the first initial replay they see, that wasn't really the angle that Todd Cantwell has, and I think his angle seems to be somewhere for, I'd imagine, Rangers video footage or whatnot.
I think that's fair, and without speaking out of turn, I was working at the game yesterday, so I was in and around the area, and Todd Cantwell was definitely not happy about all of this afterwards. I think I can say that without divulging too much. But
somebody made a point to me at the weekend in the sort of pro-VAR conversation, saying one of the good things about VAR is you don't have any of this looking back at videos through the week, what's the word, retrospective action, because everything's checked by VAR. But the way Todd Cantwell was talking on his Insta, you just wonder if he would like to see retrospective action.
It's still possible. Of course it is. It's still possible. I think Craig says, you know, if we don't... And we mentioned this, was it Friday night, when Brendan Rodgers came out and said about, you know, if it was up to him, he'd bin it. Craig agrees. Craig's a Rangers fan. And I said, it feels a bit like this conversation has got a bit bigger than just, oh, these decisions are going against my team. Because it feels like I'm hearing it at international level, at Champions League level, at, you know, Europa League, Conference League. The English Premier League are having a real torrid time. So when Craig says that bit about, you know, you know, maybe our officials can't do it, can't run it, or not up to speed. Is it just the system? Is it just the overanalysis? Is it the burden? Is it the pressure? Is it the microscope? Because I would, if I watched English Premier League or I watched international football and thought, well, they're getting this right, that would give me a bit of hope. Well, do you know what? Maybe our refs can get there, and maybe if we up the standard, our refs will get there. And they've had it for 6 years, and we're in year one, so maybe we'll get there. But I don't see any league or any competition that's getting it right.
You'll definitely remember this. I was pretty strenuous in the fact when it was coming, and I was very much against it. I never liked the idea of VAR. I didn't like the idea how long it took to make decisions. Actually, now it's here. Although there's been a lot of contentious decisions, I think there's a place for it. I just think there needs to be changes. I think that will come over time. Of course, I think the offside element of it is great. I think the real issue with it, and it's something that the SFA and UEFA are really strenuous in changing, is the re-refereeing the game. I think it should be able to re-referee the game. Ultimately, if the right decision is made, I think that's what it's made to do. And we talk about it all the time. We always fall into this category, clear and obvious error.
That's IFAB's big buzz phase.
That's IFAB's big buzz phase. But I think that's the real grey area for me, because we spoke about it in the show, and it's something I learned only a month ago when we have our annual sort of referees meeting, explaining new rules and whatnot.
I bet you're in absolute pain at that.
But I probably am. I bet
all the Hearts players just sit there and your hands up every 2 minutes.
But it was explained to me on the clear and obvious error, and they speak about this audio, and when the referee's talking to the people at VAR, what they've seen, and if they feel as if the way he's described the situation is not a clear and obvious error, they won't send him to the monitor. For example, the Ross McCausland penalty. If the referee has said, "I have seen a touch," he's went down, for me it's a penalty, they look back and there's a faint, slight touch, they'll deem that as not a clear and obvious error. Ultimately though, I don't think the right decision is made.
Very quickly, because we're running out of time, so we'll do a kind of brief look at it. Craig, the other disallowed goal, which was McCausland's disallowed goal, what did you make of that?
I think that shouldn't have been disallowed. It's either, I think two situations should have happened there once the ref looked at it. Seema's getting fouled by the defender before he fouls the defender in front of him. So you either turn around and say, look, both of them are at it, let the play go on, it's a goal, or it's a penalty to Rangers. The first foul's committed by an opposition player, not by the Rangers player. I think the problem that we've got with VAR, to get to the point, is we took this off the other sports that were a lot more set in their ways with their rules. It's a lot more yes or no. There's no black and white. In football, there's far too many. Did he intentionally do that? Was there enough force? Was there this? Was there that? This then doesn't make it black and white. Whereas if you look at hockey, you look at American football, all these sports are pretty black and white.
Oh, Craig, honestly, I had it up to here with Roger Hanna trying to turn us into rugby. Now you want us to become hockey? My goodness. Quickly, you two, the other disallowed goal, I'm sort of losing track.
Well, haven't they talked about the first one yet, the Goldson one?
I've everybody agrees with that, do you not?
The second one.
And also, but I'm glad you said it. As much as there is a valid debate to be had in VAR, are we in danger of only focusing on the negatives and forgetting that sometimes you just need it and it rules a goal out and everybody agrees and then you move on?
You know, to take Craig's point, consistency, there is none. Seema and the defender is probably 50-50. There's a wee foul each. The goal's disallowed. You watch Chelsea, Man City later in the day, Haaland and Cucurella are doing the exact same thing.
For them.
But the attacking player gets the foul in that instance, whereas the defending player gets the foul at Livingston.
You and I clash on this all the time. That means nothing to me in the context of whether that decision was. They're just either right or wrong. I'm worried about what Erling Haaland's doing. On that one for you.
No foul, goal should have stood. Yeah. Do you want me to elaborate?
Not really.
Goal should have stood.
Second penalty, no complaints, handball. Mikey
no
Devlin.
Complaints. I think
nowadays that's a penalty. Yeah.
Sorry, Mikey. All right, it's that time of the night already. Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football. Right, it is Beat the Pundit time. It's a tough school on a Monday, but if you're up to the challenge, let's hear from you on 01419511025, and the lines close at 7. Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. It is typical Monday night fare. The referee got this wrong, but he got this one right, and I can't believe they didn't spot this. And very little discussion about actual players and performances. So if you want to keep it going on that vein, or give us something else, you can do. There's so much more to get round from the weekend. So pick up that phone right now on 01419511025, or you can tweet us at Clyde SSB. But let's play this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It is Beat the Pundit time. Andy and Roger both with a 100% record this season. But records are there to be broken, as the cliche goes. Chris and Kilmarnock, are you up to the challenge?
I'll certainly try.
Good. And that is all you can do. Have you ever played before?
No, I have not.
Fair enough. You do okay when you play along at home?
Usually, but I don't know if a ball is going to crash tonight.
No, not at all. You don't sound it. You'll be fine. You'll be absolutely fine. Right, let's see who you're going to be up against, first of all. Like, it doesn't matter much. They've both got 100% record. But Roger Hanna does start on minus one, pending a move to minus two.
What now? How come Halliday is not pending a move to minus one?
Because he'd admit that he's good.
I'm not on your level.
But you're like extra geek.
You don't have a weakness. I have weaknesses.
I could come up with a set of questions that he wouldn't get. I don't think zero. I could.
No,
I would just ask him every stadium in the lower leagues and he wouldn't get them. But I think you would anyway.
He'll soon find out though.
Well, there is every chance. Speaking of which, Robbie Nielsen not been on the phone yet? No, we move on. Right, okay. Heads, it will be Andy Halliday. Tails, it will be Roger Hanna. And it is tails. It's the ultra geek, I'm afraid, Chris.
Very hard. Good luck, Chris.
Good luck, Roger.
Right, don't think he needs it. Like, what we'll do is give Roger some greatest hits radio to listen to, nice and loud, and we'll get the clock ready, Chris. 30 seconds, answer as many as you can, and pass if you don't know the answer. It's that simple, okay?
No problem.
Let's go, your time starts now. Craig Levine left a role at which club to join St Johnson?
Hearts.
Who scored the opener when Scotland played Georgia in the rain at Hampden?
Scott McTominay.
Who's the current top scorer in the Scottish Premiership?
Matt Riley.
What is the name of Elgin City's home ground?
Pass.
Name any of the three players who got a double in the Scottish Premiership at the weekend.
A double, oh.
Which former Rangers player was nicknamed the Hammer?
George Albert.
What Scottish Championship club connects Jackie McNamara, Stevie Crawford and Alan McGregor?
Dundee United.
Okay, let's bring back Roger. Can you hear us? Roger Hanna?
Yes.
You didn't look like you were enjoying that music, whatever it was.
Whitney Houston.
Not for you, no.
Not
one. What one of our back catalogue?
Hey, I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Did the Morton fans not used to sing I Want to Dance with Jim Duffy? Because I've got that in the back of my head, and that instantly became the best thing I had ever heard. Because obviously he's a friend of the show, and I thought that was fantastic.
That would be good.
Maybe they didn't actually, and someone just tweeted it at some point, but it's stuck in my head.
On the show yesterday, denied an Empire biscuit.
Oh wow, that's my favourite biscuit.
Daz brought in an Empire biscuit, which he very quickly had to give to Hugh because he hadn't remembered it was his birthday, and made up a story that he had remembered it was Hugh's birthday and gave Hugh the Empire biscuit. Unfortunately, Duff didn't get one.
Shameful. I thought Hugh had birthday cake.
This was pre-birthday cake.
I saw footage of birthday cake heavens for yesterday. But anyway, right, 30 seconds, Roger Hanna, and your time starts now. Craig Levine left a role at which club to join St Johnson?
Brecon.
Who scored the opener when Scotland played Georgia in the rain at Hampden?
Callum McGregor.
Who's the current top scorer in the Scottish Premiership?
Tavernier.
What is the name of Elgin City's home ground?
Borough Briggs.
Name any of the players who managed to get a double in the Scottish Premiership the weekend.
Amadou Bakayoko.
Which former Rangers player was nicknamed the Hammer?
George Albert.
Which Scottish Championship club connects Jackie McNamara, Stevie Crawford and Alan McGregor?
Dunfermline.
And which Georgian player played for Dundee and Rangers between 2001 and 2006?
Zurab Kijaneshvili.
What chance you got, Chris?
Aye, absolutely zero. I don't think I've done that well.
I think you did okay, but this guy just sick of him. He's got to go to minus two at some point. Right, Craig Levine left a role at which club to join St Johnson? I can see you're thinking, Chris. Just say Hearts. If in doubt, say Hearts. But no, there was a bit of time passed in between, and he was an advisor, will we call it that?
Yeah, they felt they had to bring one in with Andy Kirk because the previous manager had done so poorly.
There is that. So it was Brecon. Roger Hanna gets one, so we're level, if you like. Who because it's he starts on minus one. Who scored the opener when Scotland played Georgia in the rain at Hampden? Again, I sympathise with you, Chris. It's a good educated guess in Scott McTominay, but it's wrong because it was Callum McGregor. So it's 1-0 Roger Hanna. I have to say, the producers have maybe made life a little bit difficult for you on this question, because there are four players that are joint top of the goal scoring chart. So you had the choice, really, of
Kyogo O'Reilly, Turnbull, Tavernier.
Yes, so you were both fine. Matt O'Reilly was Chris's answer, and Tavernier was Roger. So Roger stays in front. Elgin City's home ground, Andy Halliday.
No
chance.
No.
Change manager again
they
today.
Did. Barry Smith's left, hasn't he?
Yep.
Borough Briggs. Roger Hanna gets it, stretches his lead. Do you know what I didn't like about this at all? The showboating element to it. There are three players who got a double, and you had to go for the most obscure one, didn't you? Everybody knows it was O at Celtic Park yesterday. You've got Lauren Shankland, Andy's teammate, back in the Scotland squad. But no, that wasn't enough for you. You had to show off with your Bakayoko shout from Saturday. Shame on you. But it was correct. Chris got it as well, but not enough to obviously make up any ground. And Chris, you were fine. You knew that George Alberts was the hammer, but so did Roger. And then he moved in front even further. Dunfermline is the club that links Alan McGregor, Jackie McNamara and Stevie Crawford. And Zurab Kishnashvili played for Dundee and Rangers. So it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3 for Roger Hanna. He actually got 8, but we'll deduct him. And it's another convincing one. Hard lines, Chris.
Beat by the better man.
That's it.
Cheers, Chris.
You can only hold your hands up. You going for the 10?
All right, go on you go.
Go on then. Oh, no. That's too easy then. Lauren Shanklin's been called up to replace which player in Scotland's club?
Jay Adams.
Who's the only Scottish club Gary McAllister played for?
Motherwell. Motherwell.
And that's it? That's the 10? Oh, that was too easy, honestly. We need to do something, guys, honestly.
Minus three.
We need something. Something has to change in here. 0141 951 1025. That is the number that you need. Right, what do you want to do? It's up to you. That's the whole point of the phone in. Do you want to go back to Kyogo's head knock? You want to go back to VAR at Livy and elsewhere? Or will we do some mad radical thing where we talk about the performance levels and what players were good and what players were bad and all that sort of stuff? Let us know your thoughts. What we could do right now, actually, on that then, is hear from Philippe Clement. This was his thoughts on the game itself.
The team showed a really good mentality and the right spirit. And a good mindset to play a very mature game, because we didn't give away anything, and yeah, we deserve to win, clearly. So yeah, at the end it's a very positive afternoon, I think. I'm a fan of VAR because it makes the game more honest. There are less mistakes than there were in the past. There were much more mistakes because now everybody can see back in slow motion, can make the right decision.
Right, what about Lewis on the line? Lewis, that's quite a good... It's quite a good junction for Philippe Clement. We've arrived at the international break. That's his first sort of run of games over. So what are you feeling at the moment? What's on your mind heading into this break?
First of all, hi panel.
Hey,
I think the international breaks came at a good time. I think it's a case of no biting off more than you can chew. I mean, we've played 7 games, won 6, drew 1. That one was on the road in the Europa League. We're in the League Cup final. He said that a lot of the training sessions, he's not really even been out training with them. It's been video analysis, and he's worried about the players that are leaving an international break. We've not actually got that many players going in an international break that I can think of, apart from maybe Sima. Sutton and Jack aren't even in the Scotland squad. Cifuentes has been injured, so I don't think he'll be going. I don't think it's as bad a thing. I think it's a good thing. I think it's came out a great thing for us.
Yeah, I think Jack is in the squad.
Yeah, Ryan Jackson.
And I suppose you take in one of Ross McCausland, who everyone's talking about for various reasons, will be away, I think, with one of the age groups at Northern Ireland. Is that right? I'm sure I saw that. But generally speaking, Philippe Clement was asked about this yesterday as well. Like everyone, they'll get a bit of time off, I would imagine. Can this be an important period, Andy, because I can't have had much time training recently?
Yeah, I can imagine so, but I'd imagine the players would be pretty keen to keep going. They're on a good run of form, they're putting in good performances. What is coming is a run of 12 games in 38 days after the international break, so they've got another intense period coming there. But and that being said, they've obviously now got an opportunity for maybe 10 days worth of training, trying to implement his style even more. Again, probably a lot of emphasis on the work rate on and off the ball. So I'd imagine if they've got 10 days training with no game, is going to be pretty intense over that period. What it does is gives an opportunity to the likes of John Souter to come back, the likes of Kamal Roof and Tom Lawnsmore on the training field as well.
Possibly shooting
Nicholas
Raskin's
another one, yeah. So listen, like I mentioned, 12 games in 38 days, they're going to need every player they can get available. Obviously, 2 week break gives them an opportunity to get a couple back.
I think it will be a good opportunity, Roger, to take stock, whatever that is. It feels like it could be a number of things, as Andy says, just simply getting players back, maybe getting more of that intensity into players that he feels needs it, maybe getting rest to players that need it. I don't even know, does he come out of this break with a definitive answer on what the rest of his backroom staff is going to look like? I still think that's there for discussion. I think this could be an important break for Philippe Clement.
Yeah, I think it could be. I spoke to Craig Levein at McDermott Park on Saturday night, and I just asked the question, is it a good time to have the international break? And he said absolutely it is, because since he's been in the door, he's hardly paused for breath. You know, he's in a midweek game, then a weekend game. He's had very little time in the training ground with his players to implement what he wants to do, to work on basic things like set pieces and bits and bobs like that. And if you rewind that back with Philippe Clement, it seems incredible. He's had 7 games as Rangers manager already. He just seems to be in the door, and he's going midweek, weekend, midweek, weekend. He's been to Prague, his European midweek games. He's been to the NDE. He was at Livy at the weekend. He'll probably enjoy the pause for breath and to get the players on the training ground and to work with them. You know, the players you mentioned there, Andy, Kamal Roof, he won't have worked with. You know, guys like that, he'll have had minimal time with John Souter. He'll have had minimal time with, you know, some of the other guys who are just coming back. He'll want this break, this fortnight, to find out a bit more about them.
What did you make of the game yesterday, Lewis? I know there's a lot of talking points that we've debated, but sort of overall?
Oh, just another routine performance. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, that would be a game where we'd be kind of swithering, or can we actually take the points on the road? Making excuses of all the synthetic park and all that, but no, routine again. And I was glad that McCausland got his start. I think over the last kind of, since Clements came in and kind of gave McCausland his chance, people have been wanting McCausland to get out and actually start the game. And I don't think anybody can kind of take away from the fact that I think he took it with both hands. He's unlucky not for the goal not to stand. The penalty's a dive, we all know that. But again, the team that gave a chance as well for the tired Europa League legs to sit on the bench and not have to play every single game. The depth's now starting to come back slowly but surely. An international break gives us a great chance for that as well, because obviously Mutondo was firing, and now and then he was injured, and imagine what, I mean, look what Clement's done, and now you're going to have an asset like that coming back in. But he's a left winger. Can you really take him out of the team? I think a lot of Mutondo's issues, and when people were critical of him, was the fact he was starting him on the right and he's right footed. And that's been people have been quite critical of Cantwell for that as well. It suits them being on the left so they can check in on the right and get the shot away or whatever. But who knows? I mean, look what he's done in 7 games. Who knows what he can do?
What did you make of yesterday? Again, you know, that Lewis says there's sometimes a perception it's a tough place to go. Whether Livingston in their current performance level, is it a tough place to go? I don't know.
It wasn't a tough place to go yesterday. And whether that's Livingston in their current predicament or Rangers looking better than they've looked so far this season, it was comfortable. Rangers, they scored twice. They had 2 chalked off. They missed other opportunities to score. They were well on top of the game. And thoroughly deserved the 3 points. So it didn't look a difficult place to go. And Rangers now roll on. Next game, Aberdeen at Pittodrie. Will there be any backlash from Aberdeen from their desperate performance yesterday?
Andy, again, football match wise, we've tried to go around some of the talking points, and we can revisit them if you want. But what did you make of the way the game played out?
I thought Lewis said the perfect word, pretty routine. I thought Rangers were comfortable for minute one. Jack Butland, who's been superb since he came in, has probably had his easiest afternoon in the Rangers jersey. In terms of Rangers, I think a lot of the words and a lot of the buzzwords we hear from Philippe Clement, intensity, pressure, forward thinking, I think we've still seen them all. But yeah, I don't think there was much of a fight back for Livingston. I felt once that first goal came in, obviously came after a period of madness, a period of time, I think there was only going to be one winner for the end of the game.
Can't take it away from him, Cyril Dessers. They all count. That was his message after the game. I suppose there's probably a bit of good fortune about the way it goes in, but up until that point, the pass, the run, the guys like him who got the chance yesterday, can they take much from it? I think McCausland is a definite for most people. Mm-hmm. What about the others that came in?
I still think Dessers has to do more, to be honest. I think it's great they got another goal. I think it's going to be great for his confidence. I still think, you know, one thing I hopefully come on does over the 10 days is teach him the offside rule, because it seems as if he lives there over the last few games. But I think his overall impact in the game and what he can offer the team has to be just a little bit better, I would say. What I will say is I do think he works really, really hard out of possession. I think Philippe Clement sees that. I think he likes that. And in terms of Ross McCausland, I thought his impact when he's came off the bench over the last few games has been excellent. I think Sparta Prague specifically. And I think he deserved his opportunity, and I thought he grabbed it with both hands.
Yeah, and listen, it'll be interesting to see. I think now Danilo is nailed on as a centre forward. But, you know, if Dessers can play the role for Rangers that O has been playing for Celtic, then that'll be a bonus, because Kamar Roof is still to prove his fitness. The makeup in that front four for Rangers will fascinate me, because Tom Lawrence came back in yesterday, performed well, good ball for the goal. As Lewis said, Matondo still to come back. McCausland impressed yesterday. Cantwell came off the bench yesterday. You've still to factor in, you know, Seema. Yeah, I think still top scorer. Sam Lammers is there. So when everyone's fit, and he's not had the privilege of having everyone fit at the one time so far, be interesting to see what his first pick front four is.
Thank you very much to Lewis, who was on the line there, and you can join in as well on 0141 951 1025 if you would like to do so. David Martindale, you know, was speaking, saying that he is not necessarily worried. Roger Hanna, you know, he's been in this before, not really looking at the league table, not looking at points, totals. How in danger are they?
Well, listen, I spoke to David last week after they lost at Dens Park, and I think he said at some stage in the last 10 years he's been in 9 relegation battles. So he wouldn't be too worried. There's only, as I said at the top of the show, 2 points between 5 teams. They're out of sorts just now, 5 straight defeats. They've only scored 1 goal in the 5 games. But equally, you know, I saw Ross County at Perth on Saturday. They're 9 without a win. Aberdeen, I don't think they'll get sucked into the relegation battle, but they lost 6-0 yesterday and they're 2 points off the bottom. Dare I say, Gordon, I'm glad you're sitting down. Motherwell, is it 2 points from 27?
It is. And
you know, so as long as Ross County and Motherwell and St Johnstone and others are round about them, I don't think David Martindale will panic.
Motherwell fans, Hearts fans, might be a good time for you to call. Halliday bench cam was right there on the ground, got a perfect view of everything that was happening. So why not get his insight, pick up that phone. But before we go on, just let me mark your card on this. If you go to Clyde1.com, you could spend our break doing it. It'd be a good use of your time. There's a range of presents to hand out just in time for Christmas with our online competition, Presents Under the Tree. Andy Halliday, out of everybody I know on this earth, puts his Christmas decorations up first, so this will be perfect for him. You can win an exclusive 13-person Grand Prix VR experience at VR Simulators Glasgow. It's the ultimate 5D racing experience. Makes you really feel like you're involved. The motion seats, wind generation, over 185 cars and 100 tracks to choose from. It's a great day out with the family. Stag do's, hen do's, Christmas party nights, all the rest of it. If you go to Clyde1.com, you can find out more, and we'll take more of your calls next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. 0141 951 1025. If you want to recap, you want to go back the way, you might want to discuss Kyogo's head knock, the Celtic performance overall, the numerous VAR calls at the Rangers game, the Rangers performance. And if you want to move on to something new, we'll do it. If you're looking for some inspiration, maybe you St Mirren fans, you've not had that feeling for a while. Where did it go wrong at the weekend? I take it you're not hitting the panic button after one disappointment. Any Motherwell fans? We had loads phoning in on Saturday evening. That usually means one thing, that things are going wrong. Very rarely will we hear so many when things are going well. So what are you thinking? Stuart Kettlewell, how critical a time is this for him? Where is it going wrong? Halliday Benchcam will give us his unique take on it in just a second. And if there's anything else out there, the Scotland squad's had an alteration. As we heard, Lauren Shankland is in. They've gone to Turkey for some warm weather training. It's raining, by the way, ahead of playing Georgia at the weekend. How weird is it that Scotland get into this with already qualified any thought, early thoughts on the international stuff, get them in, and we will speak to you as soon as we get this question ready.
The full-time teaser with Sliding Wardrobe Solutions East Kilbride. Slat wall panels available in 7 colours. Now in stock at East Kilbride at competitive prices.
The type of question that I think only you two could handle, because if I was to give this to Wilson and DL as an example, they would... Is it say? Does it say on the sheet for tonight that Gordon DL and Mark Wilson are on? Well, we've had a let off there. I think you'll at least try this methodically. You will try and actually recall the incidents rather than just naming every goalkeeper you can think of. Stephen McCara says, can you name the 9 goalkeepers that James Tavernier has missed a penalty against in the SPFL? So he scored a fair whack, but there are 9 goalkeepers that he's missed a penalty against in the SPFL. Remarkable.
Jamal George.
Well, even I would have remembered that one.
Sander Clark.
Exactly. So 2 in the last couple of weeks. The one yesterday wasn't his best.
No, I know. Certainly don't expect him to miss the target. So,
and I think in the stadium, a lot of people thought he hit the post, but it was the bit behind that holds the net up. But for the second game in quick succession, he gets another bite at it, and he's not going to miss 2 in a game, is he? It's always the kind of feeling that you get.
Yeah, certainly.
Absolutely.
I listened to Kenny Miller on commentary as well, and I think he was right. He was spot on what he says, that usually his second one, he always goes down the middle. But he does do that well. He does mix them up in areas he goes, and he's emphatically put away the second.
You'll know this. Who saved the first penalty he ever missed?
It's a good fact, this.
What, so the penalty shootout?
No, just generally.
Does penalty shootouts count, though?
Just ever.
In his career.
In his career. There's a reason he's asked you. Try and second guess him.
Well,
James Tavernier was playing for Wigan Athletic.
First penalty he ever missed.
No idea.
Put him out of his misery.
Jack Butland.
Wow.
Anyway, we'll get back to that question.
He's not right, is he?
No, he's not.
right.
In a nice way.
It's a warm tribute.
That's mental that you've got that as
in
well.
In a nice way. Thanks to Stephen for sending it. Thanks to Sliding Wardrobe Solutions, East Kilbride, for helping us out. You can email your question fulltime@clyde1.com. Let's bring in Matthew. We've not had the Aberdeen perspective on yesterday, so Matthew, you take that away if you can.
Evening, guys. How you doing? All right.
Good. Hi, Matthew.
I mean, I obviously heard Roger at the start of the show saying about stamping out that kind of challenge, if you like. But I think what's been overlooked quite a bit in this is that Rubicic actually won the ball. And I think if you kind of look at it from a footballer's perspective, like hopefully what Andy will, I think if you look at it and you're a manager on the touchline and your defender kind of goes for that and maybe has a second thought and thinks, do you know what, I'm not going to go in for that. Kyogo takes it in, passes it off the player, and then the Celtic go to the park and score. Your manager's absolutely tearing a strip off you for that. So I think kind of I can see where the element of what a red card argument would come in. If he's gone in for that challenge, missed the ball and clattered Kyogo, I can see it because he's obviously mistimed it and stuff like that. But I think when you go in, and you've seen it from numerous different angles, he wins the ball first and foremost. And it's just, it's unfortunate that he's clattered into Kyogo. But like Andy said before, football's a contact sport. These sort of things will happen. And I think kind of going back to what Roger was saying about the rugby and using sin binnings and the sendings off at the World Cup final and stuff like that, Rubicic was essentially, if you like to use a rugby term, he was sin binned for it. He was booked for it. So I don't see how anyone can really turn around and say that he's won the ball. Aye, right, fine, he's clattered into Kyogo. That can happen. But for me, it can't possibly be a red card. And I don't see where this argument came from.
Roger, your defence?
Yeah, listen, I listened to Andy before we come on the show tonight, Matthew, and he was making the point about, you know, if you don't go for that challenge, then your manager's not going to be happy with you. Take all of that on board. I just think it's dangerous. Now, you say he won the ball and then collided with the opponent. If Rubicic, or anyone else, I'd said earlier on, this isn't a witch hunt against Slobodan Rubicic. If a player goes in, wins the ball, then goes through and breaks the opponent's ankle, then he gets sent off. It's as simple as that nowadays. Whether managers or players like it or not, those are the rules nowadays. And the point I was making earlier on, I'm just really echoing what Stuart Kettlewell, the Motherwell manager, said last week.
Stop blaming him. Come on, I want you to own this opinion.
I'm owning this opinion. But he believes that if a player comes through, even if he wins the ball, and the ball was won yesterday, the force, the speed, the collision with Kyogo endangers Kyogo. Right.
What do you make of that element of it, Matthew, in the sense that the defence of winning the ball, isn't a defence when we talk, you know, nowadays, if you talk about kind of studs up challenge or whatever, and people say, oh, he won the ball, and then people say, that doesn't matter, it's still a red. I think Rodgers then applying that logic to aerial challenges, is that, is there anything in that?
I think the only way you could maybe kind of look at it that way is if he's gone up for a challenge and he's maybe elbowed the player in the head. I think you could maybe look at it and you could say, you could agree with Rodgers from that perspective, but I mean, he's gone in for a header, he's not elbowed him in the forehead, he's not got him in the temple or anything like that with his elbow. He's went in, it's much the same as, I think, when you kind of look at challenges and people talk about your momentum. You can't head the ball and all of a sudden just stop to avoid making contact. It's unfortunate, it's one of those things that I think happens. I think we've kind of taken it a wee bit too far, and then we kind of go back to, like, well, I know you said earlier on you don't kind of want to go back to challenges from previous seasons. Well, let's look at the League Cup final from 2018. Boyata on Gary Mackay-Steven. Mm-hmm. I mean, that cost Gary Mackay-Steven two or three months of that season. It wasn't even given as a foul. So, I mean, exact same thing. He was knocked out cold on the pitch, ended up in hospital. I mean, Kyogo will probably be back by the time Celtic come back from Celtic's first game after the international break. That challenge cost Mackay-Steven.
Yeah, the Gary Mackay-Steven was actually mentioned last week, referenced after Stuart Kettlewell had spoken, and nobody's saying that's right. In fact, the point that Stuart Kettlewell was making was things like that have happened in the past shouldn't be allowed to happen anymore. He believes it's now becoming a problem in the game, and so much so that he's spoken to Crawford Allen, the head of referees at the SFA, asking that referees become more aware of challenges like this and the potential dangers of challenges like this.
Okay, what about the performance, Matthew? We said earlier, you know, the kind of the idea of sitting off and catching teams has worked really well for Aberdeen in Europe and at Ibrox. Was it different yesterday? What went wrong? What did you make of the performance?
I think it's kind of been one of those that while we might say the performances have worked in Europe, we've still ridden our luck quite a bit. I mean, Pauk could have scored a number of goals in the first half on Thursday. Frankfurt could have done the same thing. We obviously used those tactics at Ibrox. Rangers were a different team then compared to what they are now. I think for us, the way we set up in these games with the sort of flat back five, then get the four across the middle and Miowski, it just kind of doesn't work in these games, because all that happens is defence just clear it. It ends up at Miowski. You get nobody within about 40 yards of him, and then it comes straight back. And I think that's where there's still quite an element of doubt over Barry Robson for me. I don't know if he's a man to kind of take us forward. I mean, I think we've won a grand total of six games all season. One of them being Stirling Albion. We've obviously lost 4-5 and 6-0 under him at Parkhead. I think if Robson's going to make a success of the Aberdeen job, I think he's got to change the way that we play. And I mean, we set up with this kind of back five in just about every game. There's games up here that don't require a back five, and you can actually sort of go and take the game to teams, but we just don't seem to want to do it. And I'll be honest, like, I kind of fear a bit of a going over on the 17th of December at Hampden.
But people will say Aberdeen are much better against Rangers. They'll raise their game for that one. What's your stance on that allegation?
So Chris Boyd says. I think it's again, Aberdeen and Rangers have got this rivalry. I know Rangers fans probably seem to think that we're not a rival to them, but no matter what you say, Aberdeen and Rangers is a rivalry. So you always get up for a rivalry. I don't really care what Rangers fans say, because I'd imagine they probably up their game as well when they come to Pittodrie, because they know the atmosphere and that surrounds it. I mean, we might perform a bit better. I think we'll perform well enough to win the cup final? No, the way we're playing. I'll be honest, I'll be surprised if Robson's still the Aberdeen manager at the end of January. I don't think he's got... We've got 11 games in December, or up to the end of December. Sorry, I don't see us winning very many. So I don't really know where we go.
There's a really boring sort of answer or reply to that about, you know, Aberdeen doing better against Rangers than they do against Celtic. The really boring one that nobody's interested in is, well, if you're talking over the last 10 years, it has been easier to get something off Rangers than it has been Celtic. Just a pure and simple fact. But I know that's not exciting for people, and there is obviously a rivalry more with the fans, Andy, and the kind of the sentiment and the feeling around the game. I don't know. I know people like having their kind of other theories, but that's now a few different Aberdeen managers and certainly a whole lot of Aberdeen players that have kind of changed. I'm not sure there's some sort of deliberate coordinated attempt to not do as well against Celtic.
Yeah, I think if I'm right in saying, I think it was 2017 or maybe 2018 that Aberdeen won for the first time at Ibrox in over 20 years. So it doesn't seem as if they've done all that well against Rangers either. I think they've had more success over the last sort of 2-3 seasons. I think Big Boy, they got what he wanted. I think he got a lot of people talking, a lot of traction for Sky. So I think that's what the AMG's comments were.
Just going to say, Matthew, is now a good time to point out Stirling should have had a penalty in the last minute.
They probably should have.
I'm only kidding you on. And listen, in defence of Barry Robson, he probably played that formation yesterday because that formation's worked for him in games this season. That formation won at Ibrox. Well, that formation won the semi-final, got the draw in Salonika, played well in Frankfurt, and it just didn't work for him yesterday. He'll probably not do that again now because, as you say, there was such a gap. Miovski was so isolated. Your heart went out to him. The ball was getting fired up to him and he's got Scales one side of him, Carter Vickers the other side of him and McGregor in front of him, and he just nowhere to go. So I would doubt that Barry would go with that formation again. But never mind December 17 against Rangers. November 26 against Rangers is your next game. And not only do you and the Aberdeen fans demand a reaction at home to Rangers, having beaten them at Ibrox, if you can get a result on the 26th of November, I think maybe the build-up to the final might be different.
Thank you very much, Matthew, giving us the Aberdeen perspective, which is always welcomed on 0141 951 1025. You two, can you name 9 goalkeepers that James Tavernier has missed a penalty against in the SPFL? 2 really easy ones because they've come in the last 2 weeks, Shamal George and Xander Clark.
I believe, I'm sure he missed a penalty against Motherwell, not last season, the season before, Liam Kelly.
No, but there is a Motherwell keeper on there. Give you that much.
I have a feeling about Hamilton. What about Ryan Fulton of Hamilton? No.
Trevor Carson?
Yes, but for St Mirren.
Oh, right, okay.
I'll give you that anyway, right? So Trevor Carson, can have got
there. That's a bit of luck you need sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Off Andy Haldy's backside and in. Any more, Roger?
Ross Laidlaw?
He has, yeah, against Ross County. So there we go. We'll hopefully get the rest and take more of your calls next.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
It's time for Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday to put their sizeable football brains together and answer this question sent in by Stephen McCara. Who are the 9 goalkeepers that James Tavernier has missed a penalty against in the SPFL? Shamal George and Xander Clark, very easy because it was very recent. Trevor Carson at St Mirren last season. Ross Laidlaw at Ross County a couple of seasons before.
You let one slip when you said not Liam Kelly. Is it Mark Gillespie?
It was Mark Gillespie, Motherwell goalkeeper in the 1920 season, who got a move to Newcastle, didn't he? What a move that was for him. 1, 2, 3, 4 to get.
And David Marshall one?
No.
I'm just thinking about Matthew, last caller. Joe Lewis?
Yes. Because let's be honest, Rangers against Aberdeen in that period had everything.
Yeah.
Red cards, penalties scored, penalties missed, all sorts. Okay, 3 to get, we'll get them before the end of the show, I hope. You know how I've got like a bed of music that'll play on a Saturday, you know, Goal Flash or whatever at the start of the half, or VAR check. I'm going to get one made up for Halliday's bench cam because it is a genuine standalone feature. It deserves that production value. So until such times, I'll just lead into it. What did it pick up this weekend? Am I going to regret asking this? How much trouble are Motherwell in?
It's too far. I think the bench are too far away for a proper bench, Kim. I think they need to move the dugouts closer next time I go to Firth Park. But in terms of the game overall,
you're close to the pitch though.
Yeah, I'm close to the pitch. I think it was a, I've got to be honest, I thought it was a different Motherwell we had seen for the start of the season. You know how much praise I gave them after the first sort of 5, 6, 7 weeks, and a lot of that was down to that midfield combination play between your Lennon Miller, Spittle, Payton, Slattery. Seen a real clear identity there. I thought the first half was, like I said, a different Motherwell. I thought they were quite direct. We spoke about Miovski being isolated. I thought even though they played the front two, Theo Bear and Mika Birif, I thought they were pretty direct in the fact that there wasn't much, you know, intention or direction with the clearances or the passes, and I just felt we had sort of a sustained period of pressure in the first half. I thought the change in Spittle playing higher up the pitch in the second half, I thought worked. I thought they then offered more of a threat. But again, you can see you can certainly see a lack of confidence, not playing with as much confidence about the start of the season.
It's probably something that you can, to go full circle on it, Roger Motherwell's last win was that game at Tynecastle, I think, and it was so impressive, and here we are, same opponent, and as Andy's told you, just completely different.
Yeah. They're going to miss Lennon Miller. It sounds mad to say, you know, he's only 17 years of age, just turned 17 at the start of the season, but he was playing well. They're going to miss Paul McGinn. Bab Soare gave them balance on the other side. I think getting John Obika back will be big for them. If they can get him up front with Beerith, you've then got, as you say, Payton, Slattery, Spittle in behind. Defensively, I don't know whether he would go back to a back four, maybe with Callum Butcher in front, because if you've got Payton, Spittle and Slattery, they tend to be at their best playing forward. So maybe, you know, Butcher in front of a back four might give them a little bit more protection. They're leaking far too many goals. I think, cover your ears, Gordon, that's 9 goals in 3 games at Firth Park. You know, you're not going to get very far in this league if you're losing on average 3 goals a game in your home games. So they need to do something like that. But as we said with Livingston, all hope is not lost for Motherwell. Look at the turnaround when Stuart Kettlewell came in at the start of February and the form they showed in that run from February to May. They're capable of getting themselves out of bother.
Good win for Hearts, gone then. We'll reluctantly admit it. A goal scoring performance from Lauren Shankland, we mentioned it earlier, back in the Scotland squad. To kind of link those two talking points, this must be a crucial time for anyone who gets a call up to the Scotland squad, you know, as a replacement, because there are only a couple of opportunities left to, mm-hmm. to get in front of Steve Clarke in a Scotland training kit and show what you can do ahead of the Euros.
Yeah, and I think we've seen for sort of maybe 3, 4, 5 camps in a row he was in there, he was a bit of a permanent fixture, and, you know, he's found himself on the sidelines over the last couple, and I'm sure that's been frustrating for him. I think Lawrence would admit himself in terms of his overall performances, I don't think he's played at his absolute top level in the first couple of months, even though he's still made a big impact, he's still played well in games. But I think over the last few games, I think he's really started to show that he formed throughout the campaign last season. He's obviously a massive player for us. I still badger on at the fact that, you know, if we're looking at Scotland strikers, we need a goal in the last 10 minutes. For me, Lawrence Shankland's one that you look towards. You know, I feel as if I'm picking on him a wee bit, but I'm certainly not. I don't feel as if I've seen enough of Jacob Brown to see what he offers to Scotland. I think he's only had one cap, and even then it was
not a good
idea. Yeah.
It's just there's so few, the minutes are so
there's so few. But in terms of his club football, I've not really seen a lot of him. But obviously, I see Lawrence every week, so I'm certainly going to be a bit biased towards that.
In terms of Hearts, I'm sure, you know, with the kind of standards and the expectation, there's still you're right. You're pointing at the screen because you're. Highlights are on the penalty not given. I'm sure there's still sort of room for improvement there, but, you know, it is another win. The league table, as tight as it is positionally, is not making grim reading anymore. So are things heading in the right direction?
Yeah, I certainly feel so. I think last week I was pointing out that the difference between fourth and second bottom was 4 points. Obviously, that's just sort of down to, it's not only us that's been a bit inconsistent in terms of our performances and our results this season. We've probably been lucky at the fact that it's only really St Mirren that have put any significant run together. I think now, over the last sort of 3, 4, 5 games, I think we've seen flashes of what we can be. I think the game against Livingston were really comfortable. I thought the game against Motherwell in terms of an away performance in the league was really good. But I think it's just down to doing that in a more consistent manner. I think for me personally, you know, when you keep the likes of a Lawrence Shankland and a Liam Boyce fit, I think them as a front two in this league is dangerous for anyone. I think the return of Benny Beningame, seeing him getting fitter all the time as well. And you talk about the international break being of benefit to people. For us, we've now got Craig Gordon, Craig Halkett back training. They're going to have another 2 weeks training, hopefully a couple of bounce games in that period, and Barry Mackay on the way back as well.
Yep. And you do know, while you were playing about with Halliday's bench cam at the weekend, the cam in here, Gordon Duncan caught out DL, didn't you?
Oh, in the full time teaser.
In the full time teaser.
He's now trying, he's tried to style it out, so he keeps getting the who am I questions really quickly, right? Mysteriously quickly. So we left a question, the right question, but with the wrong answer, and we just left it lying around. And then when we asked the question, he was all buzzing because he thought he had got it.
Brilliant.
It was the trap. Honestly. Roger, I mean, there's so many talk. I did say at the start of the show, it was one of those nights we could almost have extended it. And I find myself saying that most nights. Must get new lines for the show. I'm very, very repetitive, but we could go on and on. On the pitch, you know, brilliant, well done, Dundee. Big win for Hibs. Just something that at times over the years has been a massive story, but such is the busyness of the night. Here we are trying to put it in at the end. Maybe we can elaborate tomorrow with financial experts like Gordon DL in the studio. Rangers released their annual accounts today. It's an operating profit of £252,000. So clearly, I am no financial expert. It's clearly not brilliant. It's probably not the disaster that it's been in the past. It's a very, very small operating profit. I think if we're talking about the kind of key lines or ideas, is the emphasis that Rangers need to keep that player trading model. It can't be a one-off. Yeah, it needs to keep happening.
Yeah, the accounts come out at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and the thing that jumped out to me immediately were the quotes from the chairman, John Bennett, talking about the need to step up the player trading model. To bring players in, improve the players, sell them at a profit. Revenue is up to, I think it was something like £83 million. They wanted to go much higher than that. Profit is £252,000, I think. They wanted to go much higher than that.
Yeah, because that does include the sales, doesn't it, of Calvin Bassey and Joe Rebo this time.
Yeah.
To be fair, it doesn't include then Kamara, Colak, Sakala.
But it certainly doesn't include Kent or Morelos either, because they went for nothing.
Yeah.
So that is the thing that I think that John Bennett and the board, James Bisgrove and others, will want to improve upon. There will be an appointment of a director of football in the not too distant future, I suspect, to work alongside Philippe Clement. And very high on the director of football's agenda will be an improvement and a more effective player trading model at Ibrox.
Andy, that can be the reality. It doesn't mean that absolutely, critically, every window someone must be sold. But if you think in the summer as an example, again, the importance, there are only two major ways our clubs can earn big lump sums of money: sell a player for lots of money or qualify for the Champions League. So when it gets to the summer, and if you can't qualify for the Champions League, clearly the pressure to do that player trading thing kicks in even higher. You wonder, you know, is it already, I know fans don't like to think this way, but the bean counters, if you like, thinking, right, maybe it is Nicholas Raskin, maybe whoever, I don't know.
No, but it's true. And Roger touched on it, and I badgered on it as well, about this director, this sporting director role. You also don't get this influx of players leaving and coming and going when there's a manager change. There's more of a steady wave of managers coming in with similar values, similar traditions. There's not too much change. Another way to make money: young players getting a chance. Ross McCausland coming in. Very hopefully true. See more of the youth players getting a chance as well. Because like we've seen with Nathan Patterson, after 12 games, big fee.
The music's on. We're nearly out of time, but you need three more goalies.
Start yelling goalies.
That James Tavernier's missed penalties against.
I'm confident in one, and then I need my big mate, Daniel Backman.
No.
Sigrist.
No. Oof. You're not done with Aberdeen goalies.
Not Aberdeen, but Craig Gordon.
No. The current Aberdeen, yep, Kelleruss.
Rangers got 4 penalties in one game at Ibrox, yep, remember? Yep, missed 2. Yep.
He was a very good goalie. Went down south, didn't
Vaslav Latke.
Yep, well done. The last one you would never get, and it's funny because the parody account, Gordon DL's unusually large nose, has got this. And they've Googled it as well.
Even his parody account
acts like him, because you wouldn't get this without Googling. Unless you're related to this former Dundee keeper. This is brutal, genuinely.
Senny Dieng?
No, this is ludicrously hard.
No.
Ian Lawler.
Oh, right. No. All night.
We're back tomorrow at 6. Speak to you then.